go for it.
All right. Good morning, everyone. This is Dan DiNardo, working on the oral history project for the Society for American Baseball Research. It's August the 10th, 1991. We're in Philadelphia today to celebrate the 20th anniversary of the opening of Veterans Stadium. Phillies and the Montreal Expos, the 1971 teams, will be going at it later this afternoon out there at the Vet, as they did 20 years before in 1971 when the stadium opened. With me today is Joe Horner, left-handed relief pitcher for the 1971 Phillies. Joe pitched for the Phillies as well as the Houston Astros, the St. Louis Cardinals, the Atlanta Braves, the Kansas City Royals, Texas Rangers, and the Cincinnati Reds. Joe, welcome back to Philadelphia.
Thank you very much. It's a pleasure to be here.
Well, Joe, it's good to see you again. I want to get back to the early days of your career. In 1957, you started out with Duluth. And can you tell us which team originally signed you and how did they find you?
Well, I originally signed with the Chicago White Sox in the summer of 1956. I was pitching semi-pro ball in Dubuque, Iowa. I was pitching semi-pro ball against, we played an exhibition game against the Waterloo Ball Club, who was affiliated with the Chicago White Sox in the 3I League. And I pitched well against them, and their manager was Ira Hutchison, who had pitched in the major leagues with the Cardinals, I know, and I'm not sure who else. And he recommended that they sign me at that time. And well, a couple of days later, they called me up and asked me to come to Waterloo for a tryout. And I drove out there and threw on the side. And things went well, I guess, and they liked what they saw. And they signed me to a minor league contract, went spring training the next year, and ended up in Duluth, Minnesota.
When you were in Duluth, who was your manager?
My manager was Joe Hauser. Joe was quite a minor league home run hitter in Minneapolis and AAA ball. Hit, I think, in the 50s, maybe even in the 60s, a couple times in the minor leagues in the International League.
Mm-hmm. And what kind of a manager was Joe?
Well, Joe was it was quite an experience for me, the first time away from home. And first of all, we had spring training in Hollywood, Florida. That's where the White Sox trained at the time in the minor leagues. And took a bus from Hollywood, Florida to Duluth, Minnesota. And that was quite a trip. And then I got to start the second game of the season. At that time, Duluth played a few games across the state line over in Superior, Wisconsin. And I'll never forget the second game of the season. I started and won, and what an experience that was. It was so cold that actually there was ice in the water coolers and the buckets. And I said, oh my goodness, this is professional baseball. Joe was a good guy, and I got off to a good start up there and had a good year. I think I was like 16-5 or something, and I was rookie of the year up there in the Northern League. And so things went well, and the league was in divisions at the time, and we won one division, and Winnipeg won the other division, and then they beat us in the playoffs. Mm-hmm. But it was a lot of fun at that time. I was starting, and it was a good year. I threw the ball. Throwing the ball hard then. And, mm-hmm. It didn't have real good control, but wild enough to be effective, I guess.
Uh-huh. Were there any future White Sox that got to the majors later on that were on that team with you? Do you remember any of those fellows?
You know, I don't. Yes, Don Mincher. I think Don Mincher might have been on that ball club. He ended up with the Minnesota Twins, the first baseman. I think he was on that ball club mm-hmm. at the time. I think he might have been the only one, him and I.
Mm-hmm. Okay, as you made a very long trip through the minor leagues, an extended career with several different towns. And next year, we find you in Davenport of the 3I League. That's in Iowa, right?
Right, that's Davenport, Iowa, just not too far, about 60 miles from home. So mm-hmm. it's kind of nice. And after the 57 season, I got married that winter and went to spring training and ended up in Davenport. So that was kind of nice to be close to home. Things went so there.
Eight and eight.
I don't remember what my record was, 8-8. But mm-hmm. We had a pretty good ball club. And again, Ira Hutchison was my manager.
Uh-huh. Now, it was a little bit warmer in Davenport, I guess.
Oh, yeah, very, yeah. Yeah, and by the way, had some long bus trips there, though, too. The minor leagues is a lot of bus trips, but it was fun. Mm-hmm. It was a good time.
Do you recall much of the what the stadiums were like, what the towns were like?
Well, it seems like You know, in 57 in the Northern League, all the towns, all the stadiums were, you know, were fairly nice stadiums. In the 3I League with Davenport and Waterloo and Cedar Rapids and I'm not sure who, Appleton, Wisconsin, and Green Bay. And they were all nice ballparks. You see, you know, after leaving Dubuque, Iowa, the Sandlot there and going to them stadiums, I thought I was in the big leagues, you know. But it was, like I said, it was a good time and a very a learning experience.
Mm-hmm. You were still a starter at that time?
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
Okay. Now, we move along into the some more of your minor league days, Charleston, Lincoln, and back to Duluth, and back to Charleston again. You're still a White Sox product at that
I was
time?
Still White Sox at the time, and at 1 year I moved around quite a little bit. I had developed a little bit of a problem with a circular problem. I used to throw straight over the top in the first couple of years.
Mm-hmm.
And I had a little circular problem where I was, they diagnosed it as cutting off some circulation and some weak muscles around my heart.
Mm-hmm. Because of the way you threw?
Well, that was resulted back my senior year in high school. I had a very severe, I was involved in a very serious automobile accident.
Mm-hmm.
And I really don't know what all happened in the accident other than the fact that I got banged up pretty bad in my left side. I had three or four broken ribs and shoulder separation, and very fortunate to be here, I guess, through that accident. And through that, they diagnosed it as some type of, I don't quite understand all the medical terms, but damaged some muscle in my heart that needed for circulation when under pressure. And that's when Ira Hutchison then in Davenport that year suggested that I go from overhand, drop down maybe three quarter or a little bit of sidearm, might relieve some of that pressure. And through that end medication I took later in my career, it worked.
Mm-hmm. Now the shoulder that you separated in the accident, was that your left shoulder?
Yeah, yeah. And I just beat up my whole left side. Everything was pretty much banged up. And excuse me. It was kind of a touch and go situation there, whether I'd even play again, but good Lord, help me out.
You ended up back in Duluth for a short time also.
Well, after I went through some, the White Sox sent me to the hospital in Chicago and done a lot of tests on this. And then after I rehabilitated, and they just wanted me to go and throw somewhere for a little while. And I guess they had an opening in Duluth at the time.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why they sent me up there for the remainder of that one season.
Okay, then we have another progression through Charleston and San Diego also in 1960 and 61, Charleston and San Diego.
But I started out in San Diego in the Pacific Coast League in Triple A ball, and after the first month I really didn't pitch that much out there. I didn't get the opportunity to pitch that much. They sent me back to their A club.
Mm-hmm.
At Charleston. And
this is Charleston, West Virginia.
Charleston, South Carolina.
Oh.
Yeah, in the Sally League.
I was going to say Charleston, South Carolina is a lot better than Charleston, yeah. West Virginia.
In the Sally League, and I pitched well down there, and then I spent a couple of years there. And I think then it was whenever the expansion was in 1969.
Mm-hmm.
Then I was drafted by the Houston Astros.
Okay.
And
that would have been the Houston draft would have been in 62.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
So the Houston picked you in the expansion.
In the expansion draft.
You were still a minor leaguer at the time.
Right.
And how did you get from White Sox to Houston? Was that just a straight draft?
Yeah, the pool of players. When Houston became a major league club,
mm-hmm.
in the minor league draft, they drafted me.
Mm-hmm. So that was the end of your White Sox minor league career?
That was the end of the White Sox. Although the first year with Houston, I went to spring training with Houston. And I don't know how it happened. I still belong to Houston, but they did send me to a White Sox minor league team in Savannah, Georgia that
mm-hmm.
year. And I had a heck of a year that year. I think I was 9-1 or mm-hmm. something like that. But I belonged to Houston at the time, but I was playing for a White Sox ball club.
Uh-huh. Yeah, you were 9-1. You remember your record exactly.
I remember them good years.
Yeah. That's also in the Sally League. The Sally League's no longer in existence. It must have been a pretty good league.
It was a pretty good league. We had a great ball club at that time. On that ball club, we had J.C. Martin, who was a catcher with the White Sox. He went to the big leagues. Joe Horland, who pitched for the White Sox. Deacon Jones, who went to the White Sox and played and now is a coach at Houston. And we had five or six, Manley Johnson, who played with the White Sox and also played, and Dave DeBuscher, who played with the White Sox and in the NBA and became the commissioner of the NBA. Yeah. We had seven or eight guys off of that ball club that year who went to the big leagues, and our manager was Les Moss, who also went to the big leagues and managed at Detroit here just recently.
Now, the White Sox as an organization, they treated you well?
Yeah, they treated me. You know, when I look back at it, I was at that time a young kid and just happy to be playing, you know. And at that time, there were only 16 major league ball clubs also. And yeah, I thought they treated me well. You know, I probably didn't know any different, you know. And I just wanted to play ball and hopefully get a little better every year and sooner or later get to the big leagues.
These days, somebody has to spend more than a couple of years in the minors. They end up getting out of the game. You stayed in the minors for almost 10 years.
Been 10 years, 8 or 9 years, 10 years. But yeah, that's true. You just don't see that anymore, you know. But it seems like a player gets drafted now and he gives himself 2 or 3 years to get to the big leagues. If he don't get there, he quits or gets released or whatever. But I guess I felt I could make it all the time, and I must have shown someone in the organizations that they felt there was a chance there because they kept going with me. And, you know, usually an organization won't even let a guy hang around that long.
Yeah. Now, at Savannah, when you were no longer with the White Sox but part of Houston, were you still a starter at that time?
I was starting and relieving, where I was doing a little bit of both.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And at that time, and I forget what year that was, 60. 61 or
Savannah,
62.
Savannah was 62.
And then the next year went to spring training with the ball club, with the Major League Ball Club of Houston. And then the 63 season I went to San Antonio, which was a Houston's AA ball club. And we had a good ball club there also. We had some guys there that went to the big leagues. Jimmy Wynn was on that ball club, and Sonny Jackson was on that ball club. And
shortstop.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. And our catcher at that time down there was Clint Courtney. He was a coach, also catcher, and he was quite an experience to play with Clint. He was quite a guy. And we had a pretty good year down there. And then right at the end of the year, Houston did call me up. I didn't pitch, and they called me up. Paul Richards was the GM down there then, and he called me up and worked with me for a couple of weeks at the end of the year after minor league season was over. I never did put on the major league roster, but I got to be with the ball club and work with them, and I think that helped me a lot. And,
Richards was the general manager. Was there a pitching coach also, or did he handle the young pitchers?
Well, there was a pitching coach. I kind of forget who it was. Maybe Cott Deal, I think.
It might have been Cott Deal
at that time. And then well, wait a minute. I guess I should go back to. They did put me on a major league roster at the end of the 63 season. I think I pitched in one game for Houston at the end of the major league season.
Yeah,
that was my major league debut. That's right. I remember I pitched against the New York Mets. Pitched one inning and retired three guys.
Mm-hmm.
And then I went spring training the next year and then started the season in 64.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
And things went so-so, and then I got sent out after about a month or so. Spent the 64 and 65 seasons in the minor leagues with Oklahoma City.
Okay.
And had a heck of a year there in 65. Won a loss record and saved an ERA, and thought sure I'd get called up to the Major League Ball Club. I don't know exactly what my record was, but it was...
Well, the record was 3-3, but the earned run average was so small, you can hardly read it. It's 1.3.
Yeah.
That's a heck of an earned run
average. And I had a lot of saves, and we won the Pacific Coast League, and Grady Hatton was my manager there.
Mm-hmm.
And Grady, of course, later became manager of the Houston Astros. But I thought, sure, I'd get called up at that time, and there was a lot of talk. I was going to go here and going to go there to different ball clubs, and I didn't go anywhere but home. And so I was a little disappointed, thinking that some major league ball club would take a chance on me, or at least Houston would call me up. And then that winter, they left me available, and that's when the St. Louis Cardinals drafted me then, the winter of 1965.
Now, at this point in your career, you're strictly a reliever?
Yes. Yeah, in Oklahoma City. Them last 2 years, I don't think I started a game. I was, Grady Hatton was the one that came to me, and I forget what year it was, maybe spring training, said, Joe, you don't have enough pitches to be a starting pitcher. You know, he said, you throw hard enough, your ball You got good movement on your ball. You got good control. You get left-handers out real well. He said, I think you've got an opportunity to be a relief pitcher and a good relief pitcher in the major leagues. He said, you're going to be strictly my closing eighth and ninth inning. He said, that's all I'm going to use you. And he said, I think you'll get to the big leagues. And, of course, at that time, after 8 or 9 years, you're willing to do anything. When somebody's talking about getting to the big leagues, man, you're going to do anything they ask you to do. And it worked. It worked. And after that season, then they say the Cardinals drafted me. And I went spring training with the Cardinals in 66 and then stayed in the big leagues through 77. Mm-hmm.
Before we get to your career with St. Louis, I wanted to ask you about the stadium in Houston before the Astrodome. What kind of a place was that like?
Bad.
I heard a lot of stories about it.
Well, it was so hot, you know. Down in Houston, it gets so hot in the daytime. Of course, it was an open-air stadium. And it was hot, terrible hot. They were the first major league ball club to not play any day game during the summer. They even played Sunday night games, and just because of the heat. It was unbelievable. But the stadium itself, as far as the field goes, it was a nice field and well taken care of. But it was hot, and mosquitoes down there at night. It was terrible. I mean, they were like bumblebees, you know. But you know, then the dome was being built. Right next to it, you know, you can sit in the ballpark and watch it go up, you know, but it was not the ideal place to play.
Houston had been a minor league team before it was a major league city. How about the lighting? The lighting was that new? Did they have to put that up to have the major league club there?
Yeah, that they did not. They built a whole new stadium. They did not, Houston became a major league ball club. They did not play at the same stadium with the minor league. They built a whole new stadium just for, like, golly, I don't know, about 3 years, I guess, while the dome was being built, they played in that, in the old stadium. But they started that from scratch. But, you know, that part of it, the lighting, the field itself was fine, but it was just the idea that it was all open air and very, very hot.
Yeah, I traveled in business several times in Houston, and I hated it.
Yeah.
I couldn't stand it.
Yeah, and then it showed in attendance, too, you know what I mean? People just, it was just impossible for them to sit out there, you know, in that heat. But it was quite an experience, and you know, I just happened to be there.
Yeah. So then the Cardinals draft you from the Houston organization.
Correct.
Into their organization. And you got the news, and you headed down to where, St. Petersburg?
I was playing winter ball in Puerto Rico at the time. The three winters I played winter ball in Puerto Rico, 63, 4, and 5. And yes, I got the news down in Puerto Rico. Charlie Metro was my manager in Puerto Rico, and Charlie was working for the Cardinals at that time, and he'd been in baseball quite a while and a well-known individual. And he gave me the news that I was going to be drafted that morning. He called me up, or the night before, I think, he called me and said that the Cardinals were going to draft me their number one draft selection in the minor league draft. So until I heard it the next day, it was. Still hadn't settled in, but of course I was very happy about that. So went home from Puerto Rico and headed for St. Petersburg spring training and, with the Cardinals, and things went well from there. My
66 was your
my first year with the Cardinals, and strictly in short relief, and I really got a break, unfortunately, due to someone else's injury. But that was the last year. That was the last year that the major league ball teams could carry 28 players the first month, and then had to cut down to 25. It was 1966, and I did not have that good a spring training with the Cardinals. And I definitely was one of the 28 leaving Florida, I think, and not one of the 25. If it had been 25, who knows, I might have been in trouble and my career might have been over with. But the second last day of spring training, Hal Wittichek, who was a left-handed reliever, was pitching in an exhibition game in St. Pete, and he tore some rib cage muscles. And of course, I was the only other left-handed relief pitcher, short relief pitcher, in camp. And of course, that was a break for me, and unfortunately for Hal, that it happened. But so come opening night in St. Louis, we were playing the Pittsburgh Pirates, and it came to the ninth inning, and Willie Stargell was the hitter. And I forget the situation, but it was a base hit would have been the deciding factor. And Red Chaney's was our manager, and Red brought me in to pitch at that situation where, had Hal Wittichek been healthy, I'm sure he'd have brought him in, being the veteran and been around. And Red brought me in, I got Stargell out, and things went well from there. And I think I pitched like 8 1/3 innings that year before I gave up a hit in about 6 or 7 different relief appearances. So things went well. I ended up 5-1 that year with I think a 1.5 ERA or 1.54 ERA with 5-1, and had quite a few saves.
Mm-hmm.
So things went well.
As a short reliever, left-handed reliever, were you a closer, or were you just in there to get one man out?
No, Red left me in the game. When I came in the game in the 9th inning or so, he left me there. He had confidence in me. I got right-handed hitters out very well.
Mm-hmm.
With my delivery, and the ball kind of sunk and ran away from him. And, no, he left me there. He brought me in many times, to even to face a right-handed hitter. So he had a lot of confidence in me.
He's going to be just off to the left.
When you would come into a situation where it was bases loaded or second and third or whatever the situation was, and you had to get this bat around, were you trying to get a strikeout or a grounder or a pop-up?
Well, I struck out, I don't know what my career average was, but I struck out, quite a few. I didn't average a strikeout an inning, but I think I was close.
It is close. It's very close.
Yeah, to a strikeout an inning. So I knew if there was a situation where you needed a strikeout, I could come in and,
You need the strikeout right away.
I could come in and get the strikeout. I'm not going to come in and strike out everybody, of course, but there were certain people that I had confidence that I could strike out, But I had good control. I didn't walk very many people at all, and threw a lot of ground balls, and so, mm-hmm. It was either the strikeout or the ground ball, double play ball, or something like that. I was very confident in achieving mm-hmm. that.
That was a Cardinal team that had quite a few stars on it, had an all-star infield behind it, just about, and it went to the World Series in 1967 and 1968. Do you recall any of your tight situations in the World Series?
Well, in 67 and 68, both, especially 68, I was pretty proud of the year I had in 68. I was 8-2 with a number mm-hmm. of saves and another 1-point-something ERA,
yeah.
I think.
8-2 is right on there, 1.47.
Yeah, ERA. So, and I had like 20 saves that year or something in that neighborhood. And at that time, to get credit for a save, you had to face the tying or winning run, had to be at the plate.
Mm-hmm.
If you came in the 9th inning and were ahead 3-1 and got him out, you didn't get a save because the tying or winning run wasn't at the plate when you entered the game.
Mm-hmm.
So if the rules were like they were today, my saves would have been much greater than they were. But that was the year 1968. Of course, I'll never forget. It's the year Bob Gibson had that tremendous year, mm-hmm. pitched over 300 innings and had a 1.12 ERA. It was just unbelievable. And then struck out, was it 18 or 19 in the first game of the World Series,
right.
Something like that. We won the World Series in 67. I pitched in 3 of the games. I didn't pitch that well. Yastrzemski hit a home run off me, but we won the series. And 68 World Series against Detroit, I saved the 3rd game, I think it was, and then I lost the 5th game on a broken bat base hit by Kaline.
Mm-hmm.
But and then we were up 3-1, and they came back and beat us 3 in a row. But just being there and had the opportunity to go out there and say you pitched in the World Series, it was just a thrill that I'll never forget.
Did you have to face right-handed batters in Boston? Do you recall any?
Well, I kind of forget the situation when I come in, but I face a couple of right-handed. I tell you what, to be very honest with you, the right-handed batters, I sure mainly kept everything away from the right-handed batter all the time. And with my ball running away and sinking, I really didn't give up a lot of home runs in my career. No, I don't think the fence at all had any. I'd never been there before,
mm-hmm.
but I don't think the fence at all had any.
You pitch the same way.
You don't change your pitching just because of the alignment of the fence. Because if you're going to change your pitching style, you're not going to have the strengths that you should have. And you go with your best stuff. If they hit it, of course they hit.
Mm-hmm.
Make a mistake, they hit it. It's
Now, with Red Shandiest as your manager, what kind of a manager was he?
Well, Red was, you know, Red was a heck of a ball player and now in the Hall of Fame, and knew a lot about the game. But Red kind of let you go and do your thing, you know. I mean, he played the game pretty much to the book. Mm-hmm. And we had a lot of talent there, you know, when we had Cepeda at first and Javier in Maxville and Shannon at third and Flood, Brock, and Maris in the outfield with McCarver catching. And Gibson is your number one starter, and along with Nellie Riles and Steve Carlton. And, you know, it's pretty hard to mess that up.
Yeah, it is. Who was the pitching coach?
The pitching coach was Billy Muffet. Mm-hmm. Who Billy's now at Detroit, I believe.
Now, did Billy come out to change the pitchers, or did Red?
No, Red came out all the time. Anytime Red came to the mound, when Red came out, you pretty much knew you were gone. Mm-hmm. But Red was a good guy, a lot of fun. Still's a good guy and a good friend of mine. But he managed there for like 14 years, I think, or something like that.
So it's the end of the 69 season, and the Cardinals take you and Curt Flood and trade you to Philadelphia.
Yeah, it was kind of shocking. It was kind of shocking to me at the end of the World Series.
McCarver went also.
Yeah, at the end of the season, it was my fourth season with the Cardinals, and I thought I had four pretty good years there and was pretty set, stable in St. Louis. And my wife and I had bought some property and were building a house to move in around Thanksgiving of 69, and in October of 69, Bing Devine called me and told me that I was traded to Philadelphia. And that was quite a shocker. It was myself and Tim McCarver and Curt Flood
and Byron
and
Brown.
And Byron Brown for Richie Allen, Cookie Rojas, and Jerry Johnson.
Right.
And that's when Curt Flood didn't report and challenged the reserve clause and kind of ended up to started the road to these big salaries today,
right.
I guess. Of course, even though he lost his court decision, it opened up the gates a little bit and some eyes for other people, and then later on the line, of course, it was reversed. But I was really disappointed and kind of shocked when I got that news, you know. And and as a player for 4 years, you know, Philadelphia was not my favorite city to come to, and I said, oh my goodness, you traded to Philly, you know, and thought it was kind of the end of the world, you know. But Mr. Quinn called me up, and he was the GM here then, and called me up, and I came up to Philly and talked to him, and the Philadelphia organization treated me very well. John Quinn treated me very well, the whole program, the Carpenter family who owned the ball club at the time. they were kind of community. They were getting a new manager at the time. That's when Frank Lucchesi was coming in. And it was a whole new program, and everything went well. I came over here in 70 and pitched well, and I was selected to the National League All-Star team in 1970.
Did you pitch in that All-Star game?
No, I didn't. I was coming in to pitch. That's the game ended when Pete Rose hit Ray Fossey at home plate in about the 10th or 11th inning.
Yeah.
And Fossey dropped the ball. Had he not dropped the ball, Pete would have been out. And it still would have been tied, and I was coming in to pitch.
Mm-hmm. You were doing the very next inning then?
Yes, that would have been the third out of the inning, the 11th inning or 10th inning, whatever it was, and I was coming in, I would have come in to pitch then. So I was, in a way, I was happy we won because I was a member of the National League All-Star team, but in another way, I was hoping to get an opportunity to pitch in the All-Star game, which never did happen because that was the end of the game.
Mm-hmm. You had 9 relief wins that year, which was the tops in the majors. And he went to the All-Star game. That was in 70.
Mm-hmm.
71, you had a pretty good year. In 72, you find yourself back on the road again, heading to the Atlanta Braves.
Yeah, I was kind of shocked then too. That was the year 72. That's when the Phillies and the Cardinals made that trade just before spring training. Steve Carlton for Rick Wise. Of course, Steve was a very good friend of mine in St. Louis, and I was really shocked when that trade came about. And but in June, I forget, we were on the road somewhere, and I think we were in Houston, and Franklin, we had an off day, and Frank Lucchesi called me into his room and said, Joe, he said, we just traded you to Atlanta for Jim Nash and Gary Neibauer. And I was kind of shocked at that, but at that time, you know, I was going to a better ball club. Atlanta was in the semi-thick of the pennant race, and that didn't bother me at all. I was happy to go to a, you know, a pennant contender. We were struggling at the time here in Philadelphia, but I went over there and then finished the season there, and then went to spring training with him the following year. And then I hurt my knee. I tore up my knee pitching in San Francisco and had to be operated on. And as soon as I was better, which had been about the first part of June, I was able to pitch again. And then they traded me to the Kansas City Royals in about June of 73.
I think the Braves went, did the Braves go to the playoffs that year?
Not 72, no. When I went over there, we were close, but we didn't go. Mm-hmm. We didn't quite make it. And then I went to Kansas City. And I really enjoyed that. I was getting close to back home again, mm-hmm. in St. Louis. And I went to Kansas City for the 73-74 season. And we were close there a couple of years, too, and didn't make it. But it was a lot of fun. I was there to see George Brett come up as a rookie. And what a career, of course, he's had. And I became very good friends of him and my son and daughters and our whole family and my wife. And we became very close friends of George and still see him quite often in St. Louis. And we go to Kansas City quite a bit to see him. So we're still very close friends. And that was a good time. I enjoyed that. That was my first trip to the American League also. And I knew my career was winding down at mm-hmm. that time. And I was happy to go to the American League just to see the other league, you know. So I had the opportunity to play there for those 2 years and enjoyed that very much.
Were the American League umpires different than National League?
I think so. I think the American League umpires were more of a high ball umpiring, you know. And I was one that really never had any problem with umpires. I could adjust to throwing strikes or whatever I had to do, but... Mm-hmm. I think they called the high pitch more so than they did in the National League.
They and call a high one a strike?
Yeah, mm-hmm. yeah. They call a strike, and you didn't get the low pitch as much like you do in the National League. And I think the pitchers over there were, I thought that there was more breaking ball pitchers in the American League as opposed to that. They didn't have the consistent hard throwers over there. They had some guys that could, of course, could reach back and blow.
Mm-hmm.
Nolan Ryan was one of them,
right.
But I don't think consistently there was, you know, when they get behind, it was a 3-1 break curveball or 0-2 curveball, you know, or mm-hmm. breaking ball. But it was interesting. I had a lot of fun, so I got to see all the other ballparks, and was happy that I was able to play in the American League.
Well, there was more turf by that time also.
Yes.
Mid-70s.
I don't see in American League, I don't think there was as much. Of course, Kansas City had the turf. I'm trying to think of any other ball.
Did Texas have
no.
grass?
Texas had grass. Kansas City might have been the only one when they built that new stadium there. It mm-hmm. opened in 73, I think. They might have been the only turf at the time that I can recall.
Mm-hmm. Who was managing Kansas City at the time?
Jack McKeon was managing there, and he later went on to Canada too, of course. San Diego and managed and general manager and everything, but Jack was there. I don't know who he replaced, I'm not real sure. And then Whitey Herzog came in after Jack,
mm-hmm.
but I was gone then.
Mm-hmm.
That's one guy I would have liked to play for. I would have liked to play for Whitey Herzog, I think. Since Whitey was managing St. Louis and everything, and I got to know him, we hunt and fish a lot together,
mm-hmm.
and I'd always admired his style of managing. I would have liked to play for Whitey, but never did have that opportunity.
Mm-hmm. Then you ended up back here again in 1975 as a reliever again for the Phillies. This time Danny Ozark was the manager.
Mm-hmm.
Is it different from your first time around?
Well, yeah. You know, they had a much better ball club. And I came back in 75, correct? And was here for the 1 year. Yeah, it was quite a bit different. You know, Larry Bowa was a much better ball player at the time. Mike Schmidt was a 40 home run hitter. And Darren Johnson was here. I think that's when Richie Allen came back that year,
yeah.
too, toward the end of the year. Richie never could get untracked, but he got himself straightened out, but he just didn't hit the ball like he did earlier in his career.
Yeah.
But, it was a lot different, you know. And they were on their way to some pennant-winning years about that time. But I came back for that 1 year, and that's when they got Tug McGraw. from New York, and Tug got hurt in spring training, and I think I kind of had a job here maybe that year due to the fact that Tug got hurt, and that was kind of an insurance policy, because when Tug got better, I didn't pitch that much, but I was happy to be here. And then I went back to the American League. They released me here.
Mm-hmm.
I went back to Frank Lucchesi, then was managing in Texas.
Okay.
And they needed left-handed pitching, so I went down there in 76 and pitched for Frank in Texas. And of course, that was my second time to the American League. And it was interesting. I loved Texas. The stadium there wasn't the best. The grounds and everything was nice, but it was an open-air stadium also and hot. But I enjoyed that very much, that part of the country. Enjoyed it. And of course, Frank and I were good friends when I came here to Philly and got reunited with him down there. It was a fun year.
Mm-hmm.
And I knew it was getting toward the end then for sure. So.
Well, you ended up at the tail end of your career, you were with the Reds.
Yeah, then after that year, I got released, and then Bob Housen called me. He was around the Cincinnati organization at that time. They had just won 3 pennants in a row.
Mm-hmm.
And asked me if I'd be interested. I went to spring training with Texas and then got released in spring training. And asked me if I'd be interested in, I was home for a little while, going to Indianapolis, their AAA club, getting back in shape, he said, because we're going to make some moves. And he said, we'll have you in the big leagues. So I felt like I had a pretty good spring, which I did, even though I did get released. But my age was against me. I was 40 years old at that time. And so I thought about it, and he offered me a good deal to do that. And so I went to Indianapolis for about 3 weeks, I guess, and pitched and done real well. And then they called me up to the big league club. Matter of fact, I got called up the same day as they traded for Tom Seaver. Tom and I joined the ball club the same time, day up in Montreal. And then I stayed with them the rest of the year. I didn't pitch a lot, but I got there just a year too late. They had won 3 pennants in a row, and I think we finished second that year. But the pitching really didn't hold up, I guess. It was the main thing that year. But then I knew that was the end of the line. I just couldn't consistently. I could throw hard today, but then maybe not tomorrow or the next day. I just couldn't consistently go out there and throw hard.
Mm-hmm.
So that was the other line.
Mm-hmm. Now, you made a career out of getting left-handed batters out. Who were the toughest ones you faced?
Well, I guess the toughest left-handed hitter, I guess the guy that hurt me more than anybody, was Ron Fairley from the Dodgers.
Mm-hmm.
Ron hit me pretty good, plus Billy Williams from
Cubs.
The Cubs. You know, Billy hit a lot of guys good.
Yeah. Yeah.
But Billy hit the ball good. I mean, I had trouble getting him out. I would say probably the toughest hitter throughout my career. Pete Rose probably consistently hit me as well as anybody. But again, Pete Rose hit a lot of people too, you know. I'm not the only guy he got hits off of. But he consistently hit the ball good against me. Guys that I just continuously got out was like Hank Aaron. And I really didn't know this until when I got traded to Atlanta. When I went to the clubhouse, I knew a few of the guys there. I knew I had known Phil Niekro and Pat Jarvis and pretty well. And I'll never forget, Hank came up to me when I got to the clubhouse that night and congratulated me for being there. He said, "Boy," he said, "am I glad you're on this club, you know." And I thought to him, I said to him, I said, "Well, I am too." I said, "I won't have to face you anymore." And not knowing, but I didn't even know it, that Hank was 0 for 22 against me. So I didn't realize that I had that success. I knew I'd got him out and pitched well against that ball club. But I didn't realize I pitched that well against Hank. But Hank and you know, Mays and Clemente, a lot of the good right-handed hitters I had real good success with. And then there was guys that beat me around a little bit too, you know. But I don't think there was any one guy. Like I said, Pete Rose probably as tough as anybody. Had probably more hits off me per time's face than anybody else. But I had good luck with, like I say, Stargell too. Stargell just never got a hit off me, I don't believe. And Joe Morgan, I had great success with Joe Morgan.
Mm-hmm.
And then there were some guys that don't even remember, some guys that shouldn't get hits off you, that got hits, you know, and maybe beat you in a ball game here and there, but those things happen. But one thing, I never got beat walking anybody, or I was able to throw strikes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, the sidearm delivery really made it difficult. It's difficult to get a hit off you. The Phillies have a guy that throws sidearm now, Mitch Williams. Have you seen him?
Yeah, sure have. I saw him when he pitched, of course, with the Cubs. And yeah, he throws pretty much sidearm. I guess I was about that same height when I was throwing, you know. Mm-hmm. But it definitely have an advantage against a left-handed hitter. And, of course, if you can throw strikes, too, you know, good strikes.
He has a hard time sometimes. He comes in,
yeah,
puts himself in a jam.
Yeah.
Before he gets himself out of it. They call him adventurous, I guess, these days. How about all the catchers that you've had? Feel more comfortable with some than others?
Oh, yeah, I think without a doubt Tim McCarver was the best. You know, and I'm not saying that because I had good success with Tim, but I think you could ask a lot of different pitchers or hitters, you know, who they thought was the best catcher when it come to calling the game. And Timmy was so knowledgeable on calling the game, knowing the hitter, knowing the pitcher, knowing the circumstances of the game, you know, whether you just challenge this guy, if he gets a base hit, he's really not going to hurt you, you know, but don't walk him. And Timmy never did throw that well, but he never ever sacrificed that calling a fastball in a, we're thinking a runner was going to be running where maybe you should be throwing a breaking ball. I mean, he was that didn't bother him. If the guy stole the base, well, he stole the base, you know, but Tim wouldn't sacrifice the fastball to help himself as opposed to not throwing a correct pitch to the hitter.
Mm-hmm.
And you had to have a purpose. I mean, he called the game. Of course, the pitcher's got the ball in his hand. He can shake him off and do whatever he wants. But if Timmy felt that this was a breaking ball situation and you wanted to throw the fastball, I mean, there'd be time, lots of times, he'd call time and come out and why do you want to throw the fastball? You know, in this situation, you know. I mean, you had to have a purpose.
Mm-hmm.
And that's why Timmy was great. And I know I heard a lot of hitters talk and say that, you know, calling the game that McCarver was probably the best.
Mm-hmm.
So, and of course, I was fortunate enough to be with Timmy in St. Louis for the 4 years. And then when I came over here, he came over here with me in the trade to Philly. And when I came back, and he was in Boston then, I think, at that time. But, of course, he went on to bigger and better things and doing a great job, but he was, without a doubt, I think, the best.
Mm-hmm. How about on defense? Who did you like to see behind you in the infield and the outfield?
Well, when I was in St. Louis, of course, Del Maxville and Julian Javier just done an excellent job at short and,
mm-hmm.
Short and second. And then over here, of course, when I came over here, Larry Boa. And, Tony Taylor was there, and then Denny Doyle, and whoever, but Larry became, you know, an excellent shortstop.
Mm-hmm. Now, after you left the game, did you stay active in the game?
No, I didn't. In 1969, when I was with the Cardinals, Del Maxwell and I became real close friends, and someone suggested to us that we should get into some type of business before you get out of the game, so you got something to back, you know, fall back on. And this gentleman wanted us to open up a travel agency in St. Louis. And, you know, Max and I talked about it. You know, we didn't know nothing about it at all or whatever. So we kind of put a bug in our ear, I guess he did, and pushed us a couple of times. We had a couple of meetings with him and some of his friends. And it turned out to be that Dal and I, in April 1 of 1969, while we were still playing for the Cardinals, we opened up a travel agency, Cardinal Travel, in St. Louis. Of course, Cardinal Travel is still very active and doing well, and I'm there on a full-time basis now. And so we just had other people running it for a number of years, and we'd be there in the wintertime. But so it was easy for me to get out of the game, and I really had a couple opportunities to stay in the game at the minor league level, and maybe it would have worked out to get to the major league level sometime. But I had traveled so much. I was played 21 years professionally all the time, and we had three children, two girls and a boy. And it was just kind of nice to stay home, you know, and not travel. And of course, the minor leagues back in 1960, when was that, 1978, you know, there wasn't a lot of money in the minor leagues either, and then you're gone from your family all summer long. And Cardinal Travel was doing very well, so I elected to stay home and be part of Cardinal Travel and run that and make that successful. And it's worked, and it's a lot of fun. I have a lot of fun. I work very close with the Cardinals ball club. We're not affiliated in any way, but we work very close with them. A lot of people at spring training and four or five groups throughout the season. We go on road trips with them, and I set up the groups. And, mm-hmm. But we are full.